Conservative. Constitutional. It's the Andrew Cooper Writer Show, keeping you informed on what's going on right here in Kentucky.
And welcome, everybody, to another amazing day right here on the Andrew Cooper Writer Show, your source for Kentucky politics. You know, I had a plan for this week as it was the last week of session. I was going to go into a lot of bills, a lot of things that are moving, and keep you all up to date as best I can because, of course, things are flying back and forth so much, it's hard to give you the most accurate and up-to-date information because they will be going late, too, as well. So, you know, if I'm recording this even late at night, the day before the radio show or what have you, whenever I'm kind of sitting through and going through this, depending on when you're listening, information I could be giving you could be not as up to date just because some things are flying. So that was my plan. But then something happened on Tuesday. For something occurred in our Kentucky State House that is so egregious and so angering, I'd be remiss if I waited to cover it. Because it shows exactly everything that is wrong with our political system, not just here in Kentucky, but across this nation. And this event played out over maybe 40 minutes or so is a perfect example of how things that matter the most to us are cast to the side in the quest of whatever it is that those who are paying them, the lobbyists, whoever, whatever they want, who's really in control of our government, that's what this shows. Now, before I dig down into it, one, I do want to encourage if you want to check out old shows, head on over to theandrewshow.com. Once again, that's theandrewshow.com. You can check out some old stuff there. If you want to reach out to the show, there's a contact tab there. Click contact and send us a message if you've got something to say. And before I dig down into exactly what occurred dealing with Representative Josh Calloway on the House floor on Tuesday, I do need to give a little bit of a viewer discretion. Not a little bit. I need to give you a viewer discretion. Not that, of course, we're going to be saying anything too torrid, but it is an unfortunate fact that we live in a fallen world. You know, I'm a Christian. I don't know if you are who are listening to this, but, you know, I'm a Christian, and basic belief of mine is that we live in a fallen world, an imperfect world. That's why we need a Savior in the first place. But because we live in this fallen world, there's sometimes things that we have to talk about that I wish we didn't have to. And sometimes those things aren't the best things to talk about around children. And today we're going to be covering a lot, not a lot graphically, but today our discussion is going to deal a little bit with children and access to pornography. And so I just want to make sure there's a little bit of a viewer discretion if you've got young kids listening right now or other things. Just be aware, be ready. Maybe you need to turn it off or be prepared for some questions because I think they may ask you some if you haven't really had this conversation with them before about the dangers and risks of things like pornography. So with that being stated, let's kind of dig down into it. So Josh Calloway did something out of the ordinary. Towards the end of the day on Tuesday, session day, there's a chance for House members to go around and make motions and read things into the record. And generally this is used to say, oh, look, I brought these people. You know, I think Lexington Fire Department was there. So I brought the Lexington Fire Department. Let's take a moment to recognize them. Or, you know, oh, I brought this kid. There's like a six-year-old there. Like, oh, I brought this kid. Let's take a moment to recognize him. Normally, important things don't happen during that time, but something important did. And it deals with Representative Josh Calloway, who stood up in these final days and said, you know what? Enough's enough. I need to take a stand. And he gave an impassionate floor speech. And let's start off with what he started off. So he stood up and he started off with this.
Mr. Speaker, I was told that in a county here in Kentucky, over a period, of course, of about the last year and a half, that 17 teenagers had committed suicide. And our youth is absolutely under attack in our nation and in our state. There is an all-out war that is on our children. Gender ideology, trafficking, drugs, harmful content on social media, violent pornography, all of these things our children across the state and across the country, my children, my grandchildren, children of people in this body, they're being exposed to these things. And even living in rural Kentucky, by means of the internet, children have access to the entire world.
To some of you listening, you say, you know, what is government's role here? What is government's role on these items? And, you know, at first I want you to kind of consider this. Do you think that all kids deserve to be treated equally under the law, regardless of who their parents are? Because I do think there is a privilege that you are born with in this country, outside the privilege of being born an American, and that is the privilege of a good set of parents. But whether or not somebody becomes victims of things like suicidal ideations and some of these other things shouldn't just come down to the parents, for an example. Now, there's a lot of leeway here. Parents have a lot of leeway here. But an example might be, you know, last year with Senate Bill 150, where we passed a law saying that no matter how much a parent wants to, they can't chop the body part off their child just because they wake up one day and Johnny decides he's Sally. You don't get to chop off body parts because of that. I think most of you would agree that isn't government's overreach. That's just saying, look, we want to say in the long run how much damage is done here. Is it physical damage? Is it undoable? What's going on? And we have to balance those things as far as what government's role is on some of these items. And I understand that argument. We'll kind of dig down into some of these arguments on this specific issue, because I think we can't issue out one credence. I know we as conservatives love to say things like smaller government. I've said it. Smaller government. And generally, that's what we want. Local control or so on and so forth. But prescribing a policy position of I'm completely hands off, nothing is ever government's role outside of nothing. Well, then in that case, you're saying you don't, there's no use for government. Government doesn't need to exist. And if that's your belief, more power to you. That's a belief, and you can argue from an honest standpoint. But when we say smaller government, we don't mean no government. Or we would say no government. But no, we say smaller government. So the debate on each of these items is whether or not it's government's role and how important is it. And sometimes things that weren't an issue 10 years ago become an issue. There wasn't a law in the book saying you can't cut off Johnny's body parts because he wakes up one day and decides he's now Sally. We didn't need one. It wasn't thought of. Or rather, they thought it probably was included in current laws because it was never thought of that that would be the case, just chopping off body parts. And then a doctor saying, yeah, that's the right thing to do, not because of physical ailments, because of mental health. They never thought that would be a thing, but it has become a thing. And so now we had to put a law in the books. And we have to look at each issue in that way. But a lot of this is common sense. A lot of this is very straightforward. Now, Josh Calloway had some comments along those lines. As well as I want to go into what he specifically did. Because as I said, I haven't even gotten to it yet. That what happened here showed everything that's wrong with our political system. But if you want to find out about that, you're going to have to stay tuned in. We're coming up on a break. You're listening to The Andrew Cooperator Show, your source for Kentucky politics. If you want to reach out to the show, feel free to email info@theandrewshow.com. Once again, that's info@theandrewshow.com. And you're back with the Andrew Cooperator Show, your source for Kentucky politics. For the break, we're going over Josh Calloway standing up on the floor of the House, making a passionate plea, talking about our children, issues our children are facing, the rising suicide rate, the rising drug use rate, the lowering mental health, the problem of our generation. Literally, this will be the problem. This is the number one problem we need to solve because it's literally our future. It's our children. And so he stood up kind of introducing the idea that we need to do things to make sure parents have the tools in order to be good parents. And I don't mean the tools as in send them to a parenting class. I mean the tools as in having things available to them, things I'll go over here a little bit later on, kind of what I mean by that. But Josh stands up and he kind of continues on with his next point in his floor speech. Let's take a listen.
And the thing about it is that when you think about the things that I just mentioned, the fight shouldn't be that hard, really. It's common sense, conservative principles should be one of the least hardest things that we do as a body. I know it's the least hardest thing that I do up here, me personally, but when it comes to our kids, when it comes to children, it seems like it should be easy, should be common sense.
Now, Josh is hitting upon something very important. He's saying that, you know, with this House and Senate, we have 80-ish percent, a little bit more, a little bit less, depending on which place you are. We have 80% of our elected people with an R next to their name. When it comes to common sense conservative legislation, legislation like protecting kids from things like the gender ideology, things like saying, hey, look, the public schools can't be taking our tax dollars and spending it on their political ideologies and then telling teachers that they're not to tell the parents of children when something's amiss with their kids. Something that we saw the Kentucky Department of Education doing. That shouldn't be hard. It shouldn't be hard to get a bill passed that says you can't teach kids to treat people differently based upon their skin color. That should be easy to get done. Talking about critical race theory there. That should be easy to get passed. And with this, we shouldn't be hard for us to pass a bill to protect kids from being exposed to something that's already illegal for them to be exposed to. Pornography and nudity. Now, for those of you that didn't catch the last segment, I do want to remind you this is a little bit of a parental guidance section. We'll be talking about some adult themes a little bit. It won't get too graphic, but you know, we will be talking about some adult items, so just be aware. But Josh lays it out. He says, why is this so hard? Well, in his next bit I'm going to play for you, he really lays out why is it so difficult to get a room that's 80% Republican to do some of the most basic conservative actions?
The truth is this. There are no lobbyists up here that are lobbying to protect kids from pornography. That's a fact. It's not happening. It's not a lucrative fight to be in. It's not lucrative to fight for parents to be able to have the right to know what's going on in their children's life, to know that their children are struggling and to be notified about that. There's really not no money pushing that. I've not had one lobbyist sit down in my office outside of a grassroots person that has sat down and asked me to support a bill that would keep a kid from being exposed to pornography.
And he's right, of course. He's right. You wonder why we can't get these things done, these social issue type things done, these conservative ideas, not even social issue, these basic things like, hey, I keep going back to Senate Bill 150. They passed it, but they didn't want to. They didn't want it to be as strong as it was. Some last minute maneuvering got it in the bill. The grassroots of conservatives outmaneuvered the establishment and got it done. But why is it so hard? Well, it's so hard because it's not a priority. They don't even begin to entertain ideas on this until the cacophony of outcrying from the conservative base is so loud they can't ignore it. Instead, their priority is what the lobbyists' priority is. And this session, there's been more money ever spent month after month. It's a new record amount of lobbying spending going on in Frankfurt. And because of that, they don't have time to deal with the problems involving kids. being literally on the front lines of society, their mental well-being, their physical well-being, on constant attack and destruction by forces. And here's the thing, if this was just happening because of free will, free market, free anything, that would be one thing. But these things are happening because people are out there taking our tax dollars by force through government and then spending it on these items. That's why this has accelerated. They have access to unlimited funds and it's coming from our pockets. That's the problem. But there's no push on the other side because there's no money in it. Quite the opposite. Sometimes there's even pushes on the other side. Senate Bill 150 was so hard to get done because you had the hospitals on the other side pushing against it. You may remember Representative Mosher, Republican, might as well call her the hospital representative within our Republican legislature, because she literally serves at their feet, at their will. She does what she's told by them. Called us all Neanderthals for saying we wanted to stop doctors from being able to mutilate children over mental health concerns, chop off body parts. No, there's actually a push in the other direction. So it becomes hard to push things. We have to try too hard to get basic things done. So what is the specific issue, though, he's trying to cover here? What is he specifically trying to get done here? Well, he kind of sums it up in his next part of his floor speech here.
Teen addiction to pornography has had negative effects, including distorted views of sexual relationship. It decreases satisfaction with real life experiences. It's had an impact on mental health. There are those that feel guilt and shame and low self-esteem, which ties into the suicide ideology and the suicide rates. Negative attitudes toward women, academic and social consequences. In a recent survey, Mr. Speaker, that was done, it was reported that 73% of teens have viewed pornography online. Of those that have seen it, 54% of them said that they saw it by age 13.
Outlining exactly what he wants done, what this speech is kind of leading up to, what he wants done. And later on, he mentions the bill by name, but what he's specifically referencing here is House Bill 241, a bill sponsored by Shane Baker. He's a co-sponsor on that deals with pornography companies, online pornography companies, having to verify more than just clicking a button saying, yes, I'm over 18, verify that somebody is over the age of 18 before they allow them to view pornographic content. Remember, I said a little bit of a parental advisory here. Now, I think before we move forward, it's worth taking a pause and talk about the actual merits of the action of doing this before we move on to what happened in response that points to just how broken our political system is. And it's unfortunate I had to do this, because you'd think if we lived in a sane society saying, hey, there's already a law on the books about exposing kids to nudity, pornography, we need to enforce those no matter where someone's viewing it, whether it's in person at a porn shop, whether it's at some theater, or whether it's online, this shouldn't be controversial to say that, but you'd be wrong. For if you ever bother to post on social media about this, as I have, supporting these kinds of measures, you'll get a bunch of trolls who are unable to just admit that they want their porn and they don't want you getting in the way. They want to be able to secretly view porn as much as they want to. That's the argument for some. But what's even worse is there's some arguments coming from other people. And what they really mean is they actually don't have an issue with kids viewing pornography or seeing sexual things. They actually don't have an issue with kids 10, 11 years old viewing violent sexual acts on pornography websites. And if this is your beliefs, if you honestly believe kids being exposed to sex, nudity, depraved acts, sexual violence is not a big deal, despite the many, many studies on top of the common sense that clearly indicates this leads to unhappiness, depression, unfulfilled relationships, meaningless existence, and suicide, and of course, porn addictions, well, then I have nothing to say to you other than you're a garbage human being. And I'm sorry that somewhere along the way, society or perhaps your parents or whomever has failed you so badly that you've come out as such a trash and horrible human being, a such horrible person, and that your existence has now become a net negative on society. If you believe exposing 10-year-olds to pornography is a good thing to do, I've got nothing left to say to you. I've got nothing for you. Now, if you actually do hold the beliefs that kids should not be viewing this, but are against these bills, and you're not wanting to be honest, that's just because you want to be able to secretly view pornography unabated, well, I can at least deal with your illogical arguments against these measures and point out the follies within them. But you're going to have to wait till after this short break for me to get to that. You're listening to The Andrew Cooperwriter Show. If you want to reach out to the show, feel free to email info@theandrewshow.com. info@theandrewshow.com. We'll be back in a few short minutes. And you're back with The Andrew Cooperwriter Show. Before the break, we were digging into Josh Calloway's forced speech actions on House Bill 241 that he took, kind of digging into it. But before we could move forward with what happened on the floor, I want to deal with arguments against House Bill 241. Now, I spoke to those of you, once again, parental advisory here for those of you just tuning in. We are dealing with some more adult topics here. I've already dealt with the people who don't seem to think that there's a problem with children viewing pornography. And I've let you know what I think about them, and it's not very nice. But they don't deserve for us to be very nice to them now, do they? However, if you do hold the belief that really kids shouldn't be viewing pornography, but laws demanding websites verify identity more than just saying okay are somehow wrong or bad or overreach, and you're unwilling to admit you just really like viewing pornography unabated and as secretly as you can, so instead, as I mentioned, if you post about this on social media, you'll get a few different arguments, all of them illogical when you really start to talk about them. But I do think it's worthwhile for us to break these down. So those of you who are possibly listening that think somehow it's not okay to pass a bill protecting children from viewing pornography, perhaps I can get you to sway over to my viewpoint if I deal with some of these arguments you see online that sound good at first, but truly aren't. One of those arguments is, first, this is the parents' role. This isn't the government's role. This falls to the parents. Now, going back to what I started this show with, do you think kids should see this, or started this segment with, do you think kids should see this or not? If the answer is no, then I imagine, just imagine, if you think they shouldn't see this, that it should be age-controlled, imagine we treated literally anything else that's age-controlled the same way. That if a 12-year-old came into a bar and sat on a stool and bellied up to it and got drunk, that the bar owner would have no liability in that at all for serving a 12-year-old. Instead, it would be the parents' fault. Keep in mind, literally, a bar owner has liability for over-serving somebody over 21. But if they're under 18, hey, well, the parents, where are they at? They should have been involved. How's this bartender supposed to know that this kid wasn't 21? You should have been watching your kid more. Imagine that's the way we thought about it. Also, this is, once again, illegal. This is an illegal thing to show to children, and parents don't make money off the porn industry. The porn industry does. So something's illegal for children to access. Parents should have to go out of their way to buy protection software for their computers that they hope is effective and they hope seeing it. The people who are profiting off this industry should be the ones spending the money to ensure children don't have access to it. Not the parents. They're not making money from it. Imagine you had to pay money to stop someone from doing something illegal to your children, and if you didn't pay the money, that's on you. It's illegal for someone to kidnap your kid, but if you don't pay a ransom every week of $100, well, then they can come kidnap it, and they'll blame you for not paying the $100. Imagine that was the case. That's absurd. And to say, well, just keep your kids off the computers, that's next to impossible in this modern day. If kids are going to public school, as 80% of them are, or private schools even, as a lot of them are, they require you to turn in homework now on the computer. My son, 12 years old, has to turn in homework all the time on the computer, has to go on the computer to access things. You can't keep them away from the computers just by saying don't access the computers. And then finally, on the argument about it's the parents' role, I think all kids shouldn't be exposed to nudity, regardless if they have attentive parents or not. I don't think laws come with a rider that says, well, do you have good parents, though? Because if you don't, it really doesn't apply. That's one of the arguments. Another one of the arguments you'll see is that requiring an ID online is a nanny state. I literally have a constitutional right to own a firearm. Now, I don't have a constitutional right to pornography, at least not explicitly. It's not like word for word wrote in the Constitution, shall not infringe your right to view pornography. That's nowhere in it. Shall not infringe your right to bear arms. That's in it. And yet, I can't buy a gun online without an ID. I can't even have it shipped to my house. I have to have it shipped to a firearms dealer and then show up and do a background check. Alcohol, tobacco, all require identity verification in order to purchase, even online. We think, Andrew, well, those are physical items. Yeah, well, online gaming. That's all online, gambling online on your little apps. Guess what? They require government IDs as well in Kentucky. And yet, where are these same trolls yelling that it should be the parents' role to make their kids don't gamble online? That the gaming industry, who's making billions off of it, have no duty to ensure that the person who's gambling in, on their devices online are 18 years of age. The submitting an ID isn't and shouldn't be required. Another one of these arguments of why we shouldn't do it is that kids will, well, they'll just get around it. Do you really think 10 to 11-year-olds are just going online and looking for this stuff? I mean, maybe some are, but most are accidentally getting exposed to pornography. I'll tell you a little bit of a personal story. The first time I was exposed to pornography was an accident. My sister was playing an online game when I was like 12 years old. It was on a website called girls.com. It was a fun little puzzle game or whatever. She left the computer. I asked, hey, what website were you playing that game on? It looked kind of fun. It's a maze or something. I didn't care the fact that Barbie was doing the maze. I just thought the maze looked fun. She said, oh, it's girls.com. She failed to tell me that it was spelled G-U-R-L-S. I spelled girls.com. And that was little 12-year-old me, 11-year-old me, however young I was, got exposed the first time to pornography. I wasn't looking for it. It just popped up. Now, if I had to submit a government ID in order to access the website, I wouldn't have been exposed to it for the first time. And just think about that thought process, too. The idea that, oh, they'll just figure out a way around it. So why make a law? You know what? People get away with murder and stealing all the time. All the time. Grand Theft Auto, all the time. Should those just not be laws now? Because people can get around it? Well, you know, people get away with it, so why bother passing a law? On top of that, in order to get around it, these kids would generally need a VPN or something like that. And I tell you what, it's pretty simple for you to check your child's computer and see they have a VPN installed and say, hey, what's this? Let's sit down and let's talk about it. Let's delete it. And it doesn't cost you a penny to do that. It does cost you money to go out and get parental control software that you hope works. Makes it a lot more straightforward. And the point is that making it harder to access, even accidentally or even on purpose, stops early exposure. So hopefully, if going into this, you were thinking this wasn't a great idea, not a great bill, hopefully maybe I've won you over. So what did Callaway do to try to get this bill moving? Well, it gets a little technical. Because this bill is just proposed right now. It's sitting in the committee on committees. It gets a little technical what he does here. So I'm going to go over. I'm going to go over the rest, kind of a little bit of his floor speech, the actions, and how this points it out. Because this is an important process and it's an important point. We're talking about a bill to stop children from viewing pornography when it's illegal for them to do so, and putting that onus on the companies who are making a profit from doing it, instead of asking parents to somehow figure it out themselves and hope it works. But we'll have that after this short break. You're listening to The Andrew Cooperator Show, your source for Kentucky politics. You want to reach out to the show, feel free to email info@theandrewshow.com. We'll be back after a few short minutes. And you're back with The Andrew Cooperator Show, your source for Kentucky politics. We've been going through this speech by Josh Cowley. It's taken us some time to get through it, but it's a very important moment, I think, in our legislative session this year. Very important moment. I think it really points to a lot of what's wrong with our government and our representation right now. So I've went through what he's trying to do, right? So he's trying to pull forward this bill in order to make it where pornography websites, a little parental warning, by the way, forgot to say that in case you're just tuning in. Pornography websites have to check the identity of their users using, government ID documents, using a license, you know, check the identity of their users before they'd be allowed to view the items. And I've gone through the arguments against this bill and how they're stupid. But now, let's move on to what he actually did. So hopefully you agree with me. We can move on to, you agree that this bill needs to happen. And take a look at what Josh Calloway does. Now, it gets a little technical here, okay? So I'm going to play him making the motion and citing a few things in the Constitution and rules. And then I'm going to explain exactly what's going on.
And so, Mr. Speaker, there has been a bill that has been filed to address this very thing. House Bill 241. House Bill 241 would require that people that have online pornography sites would simply age verify so that a child could not get through on that and have their life consumed, potentially destroyed by things that they see that they either were not meant to see, not of age to see, whatever the case may be. And Mr. Speaker, House Bill 241 has been unreported for an unreasonable amount of time, as far as I'm concerned. And pursuant to Section 46 of the Constitution, Mr. Speaker, I'm asking and making a motion that House Bill 241 be taken from its place in committee on committees, for it to be considered as if it had been reported, and to suspend Rule 56, waiving the second and third reading, return to the orders of the day and have the bill brought to the floor and give us the opportunity to pass this bill and for it to be considered as if it had been reported. And I ask for a roll call vote for that, sir.
House standees.
Okay, so let me explain exactly what's going on here. All right, so the normal process for a bill, it gets proposed, it then goes to the committees on committees. This is in the House, because in the Senate, they have to assign, the Committee on Committees has to assign it to a committee. But in the House, which is where they are, so when the bill's received in the Committee on Committees, they have the choice in the House to either assign it to a committee or hold on to the bill. If they decide to move it into a committee, then that committee can decide to call it forward, to have a committee hearing on it, and then a vote to either decide to pass it forward or not, or they can just sit on it. Then they can make a decision once they've pulled it forward, and if they take a vote on it and then it votes and votes yes, then it goes now to back to the full body for them to consider. Then at that point, the House floor leader as well as leadership can make the decision whether or not they want to call the bill after it's been passed out of committee. And if they decide they do want to call the bill after it's been passed out of committee, then they can go ahead and the floor leader will call the bill forward for a vote. That's how a bill becomes passed in one of the houses, and then it goes over to the other side. So he's trying to get a bill discharged. Now, if you just discharge it, you're a little bit disadvantaged because of it passing, because legislators could be unfamiliar with the bill. They haven't had a chance to maybe make edits on it. And also, you need to get the rules suspended, because the rules say that a bill has to be passed out of committee and basically exist for a couple of days before it can be voted on by the floor. And so you're asking to suspend those rules at the same time. But he also cites a section of our Kentucky Constitution. I want to read that to you. Now, I'm not a lawyer. You're not a lawyer. But I do think we can both read plain English. And this is wrote in some plain English. So this is what the Kentucky Constitution actually says in the section he cited. No bill shall be considered for final passage unless the same has been reported by a committee and printed for the use of the members. Every bill shall be read at length on three different days in each house, but the second and third readings may be dispensed with by a majority of all members elected in the house in which the bill is pending. But whenever a committee refuses or fails to report a bill submitted to it in a reasonable time, the same may be called up by any member and be considered in the same manner it would have been considered if it had been reported. And it kind of goes on to say a few more things that aren't pertinent to what we're talking about. So basically he's saying, look, this bill has been sitting on the committee on committees. And so I'm asking, based upon the plain text of the Constitution, that it be brought forward and we can have a roll call vote, which means a out loud vote, not just a voice vote, but an actual recorded vote on waiving the reading. So the first vote that would take place is whether or not they want to waive the rule requiring the readings of the bill. And if they decide they do want to waive that, then they could go ahead and vote on the entire bill. So based on the plain text of the Constitution, he's asking for it to be brought forward. Think about what the intent of that section was. And it was very simple. To stop this small group of people, leadership, in any chamber from having too much power. It stops five people from having the complete say over the entire state laws because everybody's elected by 45,000. So if the majority of the body wants it to be pulled forward, but those five don't, they can still have access to pull it forward. And I want you to keep that in mind as we see what happens next. Because after he did that, you heard David Meade say, House stand at ease, because he had to meet with the leadership, the lawyers, the parliamentarian experts for 20 or so minutes they meet for, and they come back and they say,
gentlemen from Breckenridge, to your motion, House Bill 241 is currently in the Committee on Committees. A bill cannot proceed to the floor without first being placed in the Committee of Jurisdiction, and therefore your motion is out of order.
So they ruled his motion out of order because they decided, David Meade gets up there, some of what he said, in kind of plain English for you, that their interpretation of the Constitution, of the rules, is that a bill must be placed in a committee before it can be called up. It can't just be in the committee on committees. Now let's go back to the Constitution, the supreme document that rules over everything that's supposed to happen in that chamber, and go back to what its intent was. They just decided that unless House leadership votes to put a bill into a committee and it remains in committee on committees, and even constitutionally, it can't be pulled forward. Not only is this a clear violation of the intent of that section of the Constitution, but also the plain English. It says once again, to quote the pertinent part here, but whenever a committee refuses or fails to report a bill submitted to it in a reasonable time, is the committee on committees not a committee? Whenever a committee refuses or fails to report, it's a committee. It's a committee that bills get submitted to, the first committee that bills get submitted to. So basically, the Constitution says if the majority of people want to vote on a bill, it gets voted on. And leadership here has come in and decided to gut the entire intent and said, no. First, we on leadership have to want it voted on. Because if they don't want you to pull it forward and vote it on it, well, they can just hold it in their committee on committees. And you think if that was the intent of the Constitution, that leadership, that a small group of people could hold on to a bill and stop it from going forward to the entire floor to be voted on, why would they have wrote the entire section in the first place? Would be the point of it then. So they gut the entire meaning of the section for what? To make sure kids continue to have unfettered access to pornography? Are they that depraved? Or is it actually something more sinister and darker? Is it actually that those in leadership are willing to sacrifice even children at their altar of power? Because you see, you know that they didn't want that bill passed forward. They met for 20 minutes to make sure it couldn't pass, to find some way to stop it. Because if they wanted it to move forward, even after that ruling, the committee on committees could have met real quick. They could have assigned that bill to another committee. If they believe that really was the rule, they could have met, assigned it to a committee right there on the floor, and then allowed Josh Calloway to make the motion again, and they didn't do it. They didn't do it. They said, no. We need to keep control of this body because it's how we get paid by the lobbyists. It's how we maintain control. We need to control what's passing and not. And if we lose that control, now we're not as special. We don't feel as important. We're not as powerful. And if that means a few kids commit suicide or become addicted to porn in the process, then so be it. We're worth it. We're worth their minds getting warped by sexual depravity. As long as I remain in power and have as much power as possible. Makes me sick and disgusted. And it points to everything that is wrong with politics. And it points to exactly why you need to get involved. You got to step up. And you got to start being active in your community. You got to start calling out these legislators for what and who they are. Start staying informed. Heck, even share around with people this show. Maybe you've learned something from it. Maybe others you think could too as well. Well, y'all, that's what we have time for today on the Andrew Cooperwriter Show. I thank you all so much for joining me. We'll be back here tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day.